As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's Coolest Conversations throwback time in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. It was Friday, September the 9th, 2016, when my interview with Ian Hunter first aired, around the time of the release of his album Fingers Crossed. We touch on his days with Mott the Hoople, songs he's written over the years that were recently reissued then as part of a massive box set, his relationship with Mick Ronson, as well as his album Fingers Crossed, a highlight of which, Dandy, is a musical ode to David Bowie, who had passed away earlier that year. The song was also our then coolest song in the world. Let's hear some of that now, followed by my interview with Ian Hunter on your Coolest Conversations throwback, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Something is happening, Mr. Jones. My brother says you're better than all the Stones. Saturday night, Sunday morning, you turned us into heroes. Can you hear the heroes sing?
Dandy,
you're the prettiest star. There ain't no life on Mars.
Back with the Mighty Manfred. And I am so thrilled to have as my very special guest today in our Coolest Conversations, singer-songwriter Ian Hunter. How are you, Ian?
I'm fine, thanks, Martin.
Well, we're playing your new song, Dandy, as this week's coolest song in the world. I know it's about David Bowie. Where were you when you heard of his passing?
I was at home. I was writing a song called Lady, and Lady turned into Dandy.
And so you heard that, and
it was a tremendous shock, you know. I had no idea. I hadn't seen David in years, you know. I knew he wasn't well, but I didn't know it was that bad, you know.
When I first saw the title of the song, I wasn't aware that it was about David Bowie, and first what came to mind is the Ray Davies or Kinks song. Was Dandy ever a sort of nickname that you had for Bowie that he was aware of?
No, but if you look at the cover of the Dudes album, Dandies were great dressers, great lookers, you know, fastidious in their look and everything. And it just seemed a natural, he passed and I'm looking at this and I'm writing this song called Lady, and it's like Dandy comes into the mind straight away because he was such a technicolour. You know, England was pretty drab and grey in the early 70s. You went to a ballet concert, I mean, it was cinemascope, you know, it was technicolour, it was...
Right, we have a line in the song, right? Things were black and white, and then he turns it into a rainbow, something to that effect.
Yeah, and then, you know, and then we took the last bus home, which was kind of like what people did in those days, you know, still do.
So that image, that's the one I was wondering about. Is you meaning that you play a show and there's, you know, all this excitement, and then it's the end of the night, and okay, now it's time to go home. Is that the sort
of
thing?
Yeah, yeah. Like when I was a kid, you used to go to the Empire or the Granada, you know, and you'd see a Western movie, you know, and you'd come out of there and you'd look up the street and it would be Coe's bicycle shop, and you wanted to kick the windows in, you know, it was so boring. But David came along, you know, David came after blues, and England's very faddish, and as you probably know, and it was blues and there was flower power, and so somebody really had to kick against that, and David did it, you know. I mean, they call it glam rock. I thought it was flash rock. It was like, you know, something to see, showbiz.
Well, you know, I was going to ask
these incredible songs as well.
Mott the Hoople predated the whole
glam thing. They had a number of albums with Atlantic, and then you want to call it quits, and Bowie had an interest in you. Did you guys ever consider yourselves to be a glam rock band?
No, not really, no. We were all jeans and hair. And then the glam thing came along, and it's like, okay, it's like the Who with the mods, you know. We'll do. Right. I love Pete Watts, the bass player. He loved dressing up. So we all started dressing up, you know, and it was fun.
Well, let's talk some more about the new album, Fingers Crossed. It comes out September the 16th. Danny's on there, also tracks like That's When the Trouble Starts, A Long Time, which I think offer perspectives, if not advice, to fully live lives. You've also got the Bow Street Runners and Fingers Crossed. Those are set in distinct periods of time. Did Bowie's passing act for a catalyst for any of the other material on the album or not?
No, not really, no. I mean, it's very difficult to write, you left me for somebody else when you're my age, you know what I mean? So a lot of lyrics are out the window, you know. So it seems on this album and the last album, I seem to zero in on history in some way, shape, or form, you know.
Have you always been a student of history? I mean, what led you to write like the Bow Street Runners or the Fingers Crossed? Why those particular subjects?
Well, Fingers Crossed, I got this. You know, sometimes you wake up and it's a musical line, and it's like I was pressed into service through no fault of my own. Like, I love those words. They've got nothing to do with me, but that's what it's saying. And the song starts writing you rather than you writing the song. I much prefer it that way, you know. And once you've got that first line, it's like, well, what the hell does it mean? And, you know, and when you're pressed into service, well, that takes you back, you know, 1750s, you know. Where, like, you could be a privateer or a pirate. You were never quite sure what you were until you got back to England. Well, they'd either knight you or hang you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're aware, but we actually had that going on here in the U.S., meaning that there were U.S. Seamen that were getting pressed into British service.
Yeah.
That was one of the impetuses for the War of 1812.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, exactly, because of the Navy, right?
Right, right. So the other one, the Bow Street Runners, that's about like this early English police force?
There was no police force in London in the 1850s, something like that. There was just like, what, 500,000 people living in London, no cops. And these two Fielding brothers came along. I think they were judges or something to do with the court system. They had what they call night watchmen, were basically old age pensioners who would put drunks in straw cottages at the bottom of cemeteries overnight, you know, but they didn't have anybody. There was highwaymen, there was people, they would rob you and then sell you your own stuff. They didn't have anybody to control this, so the Fielding brothers came along. The younger one was a guy called John, I think his name was, and he became Blind Beak. They called him Blind Beak. He was blind. But he started paying for six constables, and that's how the police force started in Britain, in London.
And another song on the album, the new album, Goes. Now, what my understanding is that you were jamming in Sun Studios, and that song came out of that experience?
Yeah, it was quite magic in a way, because we were in there, we were in the room, and there's guitars in the room, there's a small kit in the room, there's a bass on a stand, in a double bass, Jerry Lee's piano's still there with the burn mark, where he was told not to smoke, the stars are still on the floor, you know, where Elvis was and Bill Black, and it's quite eerie, very live room, and the band, you know, Ollie sat on the drums, started tapping away with his fingers. And Paul got on the double bass, and all of a sudden this whole thing swirling round. They picked up a couple of guitars off the wall, and we had ourselves a thing going, you know. And I'm like, I couldn't think of a thing. I'm standing in the middle of it all, with all this history and all these ghosts. And it was pretty impressive. Got me going.
So the most recent album you recorded in New Jersey, is there any place you haven't recorded that you would really like to, if you could?
Well, Sun's one of them. I mean, there's a lot of places they have their own sound, but they dictate to you rather than you dictate to them. For instance, if I went into Sun, I'd have to start writing rockabilly songs, because that's the only thing that works in that room, you know. Yeah, I mean, Muscle Shoals, there's places I would like to play, but I'm not sure if that would suit me. Hobo suits me.
So September, quite a month for you, because not only do you have the new album, but there's also this box set, Stranded in Reality, that's available now. It's like 2,500 copies. If I've got this right, it's a 30-CD anthology box, 17 original albums, 19 CDs, 9 new discs of rare and unreleased tracks. Wow, man, pretty exhaustive. How do you feel about this collection? Do you need a forklift to carry it? It sounds massive.
I think the last count I heard was 454 tracks. mind-boggling. I really didn't know anything about it until it was about a third of the way through. And then I went along with it because it was like I couldn't believe they would take this much trouble, you know.
So on the day on your debut solo album, there's a track on there, Once Bitten, Twice Shy. It was a hit, I know, overseas in the UK. Later it was covered by Sean Cassidy. Todd Rundgren produced that. Not especially good version, but it was also like a big hit for Great White. Are you familiar with Great White's version of Once Bitten, Twice Shy?
Yeah.
Much of a Great White fan, or how do you think they pulled it off?
Oh, that was all right, you know.
Well, thinking of other songs you've done, I don't know if you know this, but Drew Carey is a disc jockey here in the Underground Garage. He has a monthly show on Once a Month, and he used the tune Cleveland Rocks as his theme song to his sitcom. At first, I want to commend you for writing a song about Cleveland, because Cleveland does, in fact, rock. I mean, it's like one of the greatest places to play, I think, in a rock and roll band. Why were you writing about Cleveland?
Well, because when I first came over, you know, you had the talk shows, you had the Merv Griffins and, you know, Johnny Carson and all that. And when they were looking for a town to take the mickey out of, you know, it always seemed to be Cleveland.
Yeah.
And from where I was looking, we were doing better in Cleveland than anywhere else. We were doing better in Cleveland than New York or LA. We thought Cleveland was well ahead of the game. Coming out of England, you know, they were picking up on bands that were not even heard of on the coast. So I must have got a bit pissy and wrote the song called Cleveland Rock, yeah.
So both that song and Once Bitten, Twice Shy have Mick Ronson involved with them, and he worked with you for a number of years off and on again. What was your relationship like with Mick?
Oh, it couldn't have been better. Fabulous. I mean, he's such a great arranger. That's what I miss most, is arranging. You know, I mean, he's a terrific guitar player, obviously. Everybody knows that. But his arranging ability was second to none. And he was a great mate, even when we weren't working together. You know, our kids grew up together, and the wives were always together, you know. So it was a hell of a loss. It gave me a hell of a wake-up call to go that young, you know.
Right, because he passed at 46. That must have been a real surprise, right?
Well, he rang me 3 years before. We knew something was going on, you know.
Yeah.
But then a year before he rang, and it was like there was nothing anybody could do, you know. And here he was. He had signed with Epic. He had his own deal, you know. He was producing Morrissey. And he had everything to live for. So it was extremely difficult. It was awful.
Well, back in June of 1974, your tour memoir, Diary of a Rock and Roll Star, was published. And it details 5 weeks of November through December 72, a U.S. tour. And I got chastised again last night for not having read that. I have to fess up. But everybody tells me it's how terrific and what a great read it is. And that is the first, you know, sort of tour diary memoir. What possessed you to write it and get it published, and is it still available?
I just got married, and my memory's never been any good. My mother's memory was crap as well. But so I wrote it more or less to remember that particular tour, because it was an interesting tour, and it had a nice ending where I sort of crept into Elvis's place. I just got married, so I wasn't bothering with any extracurricular activity. And no, it's not out at the moment. It could be out, but I don't like what I'm being offered.
I see. Well, maybe you got the new album and you got this big box set. Got to look into getting that back into print.
I'm perfectly happy keeping it.
Well, you know, we need to take a listen to another track from Fingers Crossed, and I want us to go out with its closing cut, Long Time. So is that like a career overview, a life overview, or what? How would you describe
it? Yeah, it's just sat down at the piano one day and the hook just came out of my mouth, and I just thought, yeah, I like that. It's simple, straightforward, just turned it into a song, you know.
Yeah, I really like a lot of the lyrics in there, fortune, misfortune, intertwined. very cool stuff.
Thank you.
Well, Ian, before we spin that song, I want to thank you again so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, it's a privilege being on your show, man. Thanks for having me.
You're certainly welcome. Right now, here's Long Time from the brand new album, Fingers Crossed. It's Ian Hunter, Little Stevens, Underground Garage.
They call me the idiot. My hands were on fire. Blood flowed from my fingers every time I pressed the wire. Exiled to the attic. Out of harm's way. I hit that bow an hour till I hit the hay. I got a suitcase full of energy. I'm following the wind. Old enough to know better.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.